Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications.
Hello, and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm Ed White, your host this week. Later in the show, we'll catch up with the markets as they cope with a tempestuous world situation. We'll hear about farmers who are scrambling to fill the demand from consumers for food direct from the farm to them. But first, are you a family farm getting ready for seeding? Are you busy with calves and hoping the grass will green soon? Do you have kids at home who should be at school, but that you're now expected to homeschool? I've been looking at this issue, and so has Geraldine Witchers of the Manitoba Cooperator. It seems like homeschooling on the farm has one major challenge that doesn't apply to towns and cities. Geraldine joins me now to talk about this. Can you give me a bit of a sense of, from the reporting you did, you heard about this particular problem as I did. What is the specific farm challenge when it comes to homeschooling your kids suddenly?
Well, actually, I don't want to make it sound like there's no one in the city who's having this issue, because I know there are still some people who are struggling with this in cities and towns, but the issue is internet. As many of our listeners know, rural internet can be a very special beast. It's generally a lot slower than town internet, and it can be patchy, and its service tends to cut out sometimes, and also it can be really expensive.
Yeah, I think that's just a challenge that most people, not just in the cities, I mean, I'm sure city people don't really think about that much. But even town people, that's what I found when I was calling parents that are, in farming areas and are trying to use their normal links to get internet, they were finding that even the rural schools hadn't realized how tough a problem internet access is for the farm families. They were just assuming that kids would be able to get online and take their assignments like they're doing for the people in town and in the cities.
Yeah, I don't know. I did speak to some of the more isolated school districts, some of the ones above Rocky Mountain National Park, for instance, and they did seem to be fairly cognizant of that. They were, at that time, so this was a couple weeks back by now, they were taking inventories of all their students, even some teachers who didn't have access to solid internet, and they were already working on how to get around that. So they did seem to know that it was an issue.
And what are you hearing from farm parents about how they're trying to deal with these challenges of needing the internet access to get their kids' assignments, and yet not always knowing when they're going to be able to actually get enough bandwidth to get in there and get it?
Well, from what I've heard, has been a lot of positive feedback about the teachers. The teachers are apparently working very hard to make things work, whether it's just like making phone calls instead of expecting them to get all their feedback and so forth by internet. So one farm family that I talked to said that their internet does tend to cut out, but at least they're not expected to be online at a certain time. So these were younger elementary age kids. These were high school students, but they weren't expected to show up, say on a Zoom meeting or something, at a specific time. They could just, whenever they actually had internet service, they could watch the videos or download their stuff. In the one, my aunt and uncle's family, they have university students. It involves them taking turns because they just don't have the bandwidth to all do the things that they need to right now, and so they right at the same time. So they just take turns, or some people just like, well, I guess we're just not going to use the internet right now. So the people who have stuff they have to be at virtually can use the internet.
And one interesting thing I heard in. From a farmer in Saskatchewan was that sometimes you can get decent internet service during the day, but now that everybody's home and all the kids are trying to get connected up, When there's limited local resources, it's really hard to get on. It's hard to get on and up, whereas you might have before been able to do it when there's only, you know, local businesses and maybe some, you know, domestic users on farm trying to use it. Now that there's these legions of kids all trying to connect at the same time, the service is just getting more spotty and sporadic than they've noticed it before. Did you hear a similar thing?
I haven't heard that from families with kids. I can say that a little bit from my family's experience, where Sunday morning they want to stream church, and the internet's too slow. They're kind of out in the bush, east of Winnipeg, and if you catch it early enough, then you can stream church, and if you try to do it a little bit later, then all of a sudden the internet speed is tanked and you can't stream church that day. So that's the only experience I have in that particular area.
Yeah, I think it's really highlighting that whole internet challenge thing. I think people with their normal operations are used to the challenges, and so it just becomes, although I know farmers always raise the issue, it's not like a sudden problem that bewilders people because they've just been living with it forever. But with the school situation, it certainly seems to have highlighted some of the challenges that your average farm family has that most town families and city families wouldn't face. What are you hearing in general, you know, the families you spoke to, what are you hearing in terms of how they're, you know, feeling about all of a sudden having the kids home all day and they're needing to take on that responsibility of educating their kids?
I think that like the city families, they are struggling with the extra time together. You know, it's both a blessing and a curse simultaneously. One family that I talked to, the mom told me this really cute story of they had this like a 10-year-old daughter and then I think a 6-year-old and 2 3-year-olds, and they had a little science experiment going. With the water evaporation in the cup, and they had to mark the levels. And they had left the cup, and they had gone outside to play, and they came back, and the water level had really dropped, and they're like, oh, this is awesome. Like, who knew it would go that fast? And then one of the little three-year-olds is like, oh, I drank some. And they're like, oh! The challenges of homeschooling when you have little kids around. So I imagine that is... It's a common theme. And then some of these families are also working from home. So I think it's kind of wearing down on everyone. But what I've also heard from farm families is like, well, at least we can send them outside. One person was joking on Twitter that they had to yell at their kids to come back inside because, you know, they're awfully wet. Like, shouldn't you come back inside? You've been out there for hours. So I guess there's at least a little bit of a benefit of being on the farm in that way.
Yeah, that was the exact same thing I heard from a couple of different moms I spoke to last week, where they were pointing out that, you know, maybe in town or in a city, you're in a house with a small yard or no yard, or you're in an apartment, and the kids might start going a little crazy, whereas on the farm, especially if you need to get away from each other, the kids can go outside and play or do things. And they also have these kind of learning opportunities where they can go with mom and dad and do some of the farm work. And they're you know, it's work on the farm, and it's an education in, you know, running a farm and business. And that's not something that's always so easy to do in other contexts. So while the internet access might be a real challenge, the ability to learn hands-on how to operate a farm is all of a sudden in front of those kids all the time, whereas normally it might be hidden for most of the week.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually a homeschool kid growing up. I was homeschooled from you know, as soon as I was old enough to do my ABCs until grade 12, and my mom kicked us out of the house after lunch every day for a certain length of time. For her own sanity, I'm sure, but we use that time often to like be out in the bush building forts, and we had our farm chores that we had to do and yard chores that we had to do, and that was, looking back, like that's very well behind me now. That was a lot of happy memories and a lot of good learning experiences.
Yeah, this might not be, for the kids at least, this might not be too bad a set of memories once we get on the other side of this this whole situation.
Hopefully not, yeah. Kids are awfully resilient that way.
Well, thank you very much, Sherilyn, for joining us today. I appreciate your time here.
No problem.
Sherilyn Witchers is a reporter with the Manitoba Cooperator. Usually the grocery, restaurant, and food industry isn't that exciting. But with the coronavirus crisis, food and how people obtain it has become both national news and exciting in a scary way. There's been a lot of change in recent weeks, and farmers who sell their meats, vegetables, and other products to local consumers have seen a boom in interest from scared consumers wanting to find local food they won't need to rely upon grocery stores for. I've been covering this for The Western Producer, and John Grieg has been covering it for Farmtario. John joins me now. Hello, John, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Ed. How are you?
Very well, thanks. So we've been covering some of the same stuff on opposite sides of the country. You know, from what you've seen and heard in your neck of the woods, why is it the demand is spiking?
I think there are a couple of things. First of all, as you mentioned in your intro, people are looking for an alternative to the grocery store, and I think there's a couple of things there. The first is they just don't want or where there may be another 50 people around. You know, that's number one. And then number two, I think there's a bit of a connection to a local farmer. I know who they are and I trust them to keep my food safe or to supply me with a X volume of food. A lot of them are people are filling their freezers and they're turning to local farmers to do that.
And, you know, how are the producers who are serving this market seeing it? What's their feeling about what's happened in this last crazy month?
Yeah, crazy is what they've kind of called it. It's been completely unexpected. I mean, I guess they might have expected once we were into this crisis, but you know, a month or two ago, completely unexpected and unprepared, really, a lot of them were. As the one farmer I talked to who's very much as a CSA, direct-to-consumer, community share agriculture, your local farmer type of a deal with a very nice on-farm store. March and April, usually at the time where they're spending in their greenhouse, getting plants ready, planting things, they don't necessarily want to spend all their time in their store, but they had a 400% increase in sales. And it's been overwhelming to manage that because a lot of them have, number one, moved on to an online marketing system over the last month. And number two, to find the products to fill the store. So they've had to talk to other local farmers. They're working with other direct-to-consumer farmers. And then to do all this within a context of keeping, you know, themselves, their employees, and their customers safe. So it's been quite overwhelming for some of them, but exciting as well.
And, you know, out here on the prairies, we've got some decent-sized cities scattered, but nothing with nearly the population, nor the sort of gravitational pull of Toronto. I imagine that whole Toronto area demand must have a real effect on those kind of direct-to-the-consumer farmers.
Yeah, that population base is really provides, you know, as you say, the gravitational pull for a lot of those products. The farmers I talked to, several of them who are working together are a couple hours north of Toronto, but a lot of what they do is driven by Toronto. Some of them supply farmers markets, or they go to Toronto every week to sell at a specialized farmers market, some of which are shut down, which have created other problems for them. And then the one woman who'd had a really better on farm store, where she could tell they were either people coming out from Toronto or who had come to their cottages or second properties in their neighborhood, you know, to escape the virus or whatever they thought they were doing. And but you know, she could tell by the area codes and the phone calls she was getting that they were certainly having a city impact. But I don't think it's just cities. I think a lot of people in rural areas as well have, because they know a local farmer or they've heard of someone that sells, they're now calling them up and saying they want to buy something, but most of them are sold out.
Well, it's interesting stuff, I guess, across the country this is happening. So, well, thank you very much, John, and I guess people can find your story in Farmtario, and they'll find our kind of Western angle in The Western Producer and in other Glacier Farm Media publications. So thanks for coming on the show today.
No problem. Take care.
Appreciate your time. Bye-bye. John Grieg writes for Farmtario. Now let's hear from one of the farmers themselves. Mark Hoymer of Southern Saskatchewan has been selling grass-fed beef to Regina area consumers and grocery stores. Here's his experience.
First and foremost, it's definitely increased sales. We do monthly deliveries. So, I mean, we've really only seen, and our next month's delivery is still coming up. So we've really only seen 1 month, like last month's bump, but it was easily double or more normal than what we would have delivered. And that's just kind of the direct farm sales. We also deliver to a few grocery stores in Regina. And fortunately for us, out of no real pre-planning or by design or anything, they happen to be grocery stores that do deliveries and did deliveries even before this started. So the product we've been moving through them has been probably 3 or 4 times as much.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah, it's a little bit to get onto. We finish our cattle on grass, so we had a pretty decent supply going into spring, but that's gone. it sure doesn't take long.
No doubt. And it's it looks like with this spring, it's going to be a while before there's much green coming up.
It does, yeah. Yeah, we're able to still source. It seems like the ground beef and products from ground beef are by far the things that are moving in the most volume. So that's something we can still manage. But yeah, it's going to be a while before anything's getting fat off grass.
Could too many farmers pile into the business and glut it? Mark and others I spoke to aren't afraid of that, it seems.
Not really worried over any long period of time. I think you're right. There is. I've already noticed there's lots of ranchers trying to sell beef in that way. There is a very limited number of people that are actually capable of taking large quantities of beef, like halves and wholes, big bulk orders. Most people just don't have the freezer capacity for that. So, and most ranchers, that's the way they want to deal with it. They don't want to do little bits and pieces. So, once both parties figure that out, that narrows the field significantly. And it is still a business, and you have to be very careful about what you're selling your product for, because I mean you can still very easily sell things direct to consumer and really make no more money than you would have if you just would have sold that cull cow if you're not careful on pricing.
That was Mark Hoymer of Box H Farm. This is Between the Rows. And now for an update on the markets, I'm joined by Glenn Halleck of Glacier Markets Farm. Hello, Glenn, and welcome to Between the Rows.
Hi, Ed. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, Glenn, things don't get any less crazier, do they, week by week in this present crisis?
Oh, no. It's getting quite nuts out there in the markets.
You and I normally talk about crops and maybe sometimes livestock prices. Sometimes we verge into the other commodities, but really, it seems like the most important thing we could talk about for the sake of farmers, just because it affects everything, is what the heck is going on with crude oil, which seems to have gone into territory of pricing, at least on futures contracts, the expiring futures contract that just ended, which we have never seen before.
Yeah, this is the first time that the oil price that we see the most on the TV news, that's West Texas Intermediate. It's the main North American benchmark crude oil price. It, for the first time, dipped into the negatives, not just by, you know, a couple of cents or a couple of bucks. It fell to minus 30 bucks a barrel yesterday. Now, part of that is the May contract. Traders are beginning to roll out. The May contract ends on Tuesday. So starting Monday, traders were really getting into a panic, very frantic, trying to get out of the May contract. They want to roll into the June contract, and they're trying to get anything they can. And, you know, you see the price go from, what, $15, $20 a barrel, down, goes past zero, right to about minus 30 bucks a barrel. You know, the world's never seen that before.
Yeah, I was watching that live when that was happening the other day, and it was just an amazing cascade downwards. It was like like an avalanche down, and just I kept refreshing my charts, and it was like, wow, this is truly something, a phenomenon in other markets. Now, you know, taking that this was to a degree a futures market phenomenon, how much of that collapse to past zero in value is hitting actual physical oil supplies when the stuff is actually trading out there? How close are the are the real spot market prices to what we saw on the charts?
Yeah, on Tuesday the May contract comes to an end, and it's I think it did manage to get over $1 or $2 to the plus side today. But when you look at the grand scheme of things, this is the May contract. There's been maybe 4,000 or 5,000 contracts sold so far today. You look at the June contract today, and you know it's much larger. There's been the volume's about 1.25 million contracts traded today. So.
And when you're saying today, you're meaning Tuesday.
Yes. Right. On Tuesday. So really on Tuesday, the May contract, regardless of what the price is, doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. The main thing is to look right now is that the June contract, and it's, you know, 1.25 million contracts dealt with so far today on Tuesday, but it's gone from about $20, $21 this morning to about $13, $14. So it's coming down too. Whether or not we're going to see negative pricing, you know, that's off in the future. We don't know yet.
And what's interesting here is so often in agriculture, looking at those commodities, and of course with Canada, and with oil and other fossil fuels. Or liquid fossil fuels, what we're always talking about is essentially pipeline capacity. So with the oils, it actually is an actual pipeline. With grains, we're talking about rail capacity. But this time it isn't that, is it? It's a storage issue.
Yeah. The main U.S. Storage facility in Cushing, Oklahoma, right now it's roughly at 75% capacity. Estimates are within a few weeks, they could be totally full. And, you know, when you take in all the other storage areas throughout North America, where are you going to put this oil? You know, something drastic may have to be done.
Yeah, it's a bizarre situation. I mean, it's truly not something anyone was really prepared for. Now, this is obviously has knock-on effects in the other commodities, not just in terms of sympathy, but even in terms of, and obviously in terms of ethanol production and biodiesel. Now, how are we seeing those effects, not just on those energy commodities, but on the agricultural commodities that they're based off of?
Yeah, just on Tuesday at midday, canola was down $3-4 a ton. Soy oil was down over a penny Tuesday midday. Corn was down, I think, about eight and a half cents a midday Tuesday. It's wreaking havoc on like corn, especially because of ethanol.
Yeah.
The lower crude prices have made ethanol production unprofitable.
Yeah, I was reading earlier this week that I believe it was 73 ethanol plants in the U.S. by one person's count were now out of production, and every day that's increasing. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know that was even starting to happen back in early March when the price of crude oil really began to tumble. And everything, you know, with prices being, you know, a 20-year lows, some pushing into negative pricing. We have the COVID pandemic that's absolutely destroyed demand for fuels. It's just all snowballing into, I guess, a perfect storm.
It's funny. Some of the crops have been a little firmer than other commodities. I guess we're still seeing an element of that, although they've proven they are certainly not impervious to this market nightmare for some of the other commodities.
Yeah. Yeah. Canola reacts a little bit slower to what happens with the Chicago soy complex and with corn, but too, it's dropping as well.
Yeah, I guess it kind of gets a bit of a lag effect, and
yeah,
we don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. So, well, Glenn, thank you very much for leading us through this. It's not often that we spend most of our time talking about West Texas Intermediate, but
yeah.
I guess we've got to recognize the fact that we're living through historical times.
Oh, we are definitely.
Well, thanks for joining me today, Glenn.
Okay, thanks, Ed.
Glenn Halleck is a reporter with Glacier Markets Farm. This is Between the Rows. That's all for this week's edition, but we actually have more for you to hear online. Be sure to check out a special 4-part series of Between the Rows looking at how COVID-19 is affecting agriculture. If you're a subscriber already, Farming Through the Pandemic will come to you the same way our weekly podcast does. If you'd like to find it online, look for it on your favorite Glacier Farm Media Publications website. Until next week, all the best. I'm Ed White.
Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca and sign up today.